You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss. A very good Sunday morning to you. Crossing now to our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks in Washington, D.C. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks again for joining us here. Let's just start off again with the Duke of Edinburgh. You know, the tributes. We spoke about some tributes yesterday by Obama, by, you know, Trump and also President Biden. But those tributes in the US do continue to come in for Prince Philip.
They do indeed. And we've now had statements of condolence and tributes issued from all the living former presidents of the United States. Jimmy Carter put out a statement last night saying, "Rosalind and I are saddened by the passing of Prince Philip. We have fond memories of meeting the prince and Queen Elizabeth II early in my presidency," which, of course, was back in 1976. "He was gracious, kind, and served Great Britain with honor. We send our condolences to Her Majesty the Queen, the royal family, and citizens of the UK." So that's coming from Jimmy Carter out in Georgia. And from Texas, a statement from former President George W. Bush, who said that Prince Philip brought boundless strength and support to the Queen throughout his long and remarkable life. He devoted himself to worthy causes and to others. And they go on to get a little bit personal, as indeed did Barack Obama and Donald Trump in their statements yesterday. "Laura and I are fortunate to have enjoyed the charm and wit of his company, and we know how much he will be missed." They send their condolences, of course, to the Queen and say that the Duke of Edinburgh represented the United Kingdom with dignity and brought boundless strength, as I said, and support to the sovereign. So those are the statements from now all the former presidents of the United States. And we learned more over the last few hours, of course, about the funeral arrangements. The funeral will take place in the UK next Saturday at St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle. It is being held under COVID regulations, so there will only be a limited number of seats available for members of the royal family and others to attend the funeral in person. Indeed, so few seats that the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has actually offered to give his up so that another member of the royal family might be able to take it. And so Boris Johnson will not now attend the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral next weekend. Prince Harry will. He will fly from California to the UK at some point over the next few days to attend the funeral. But his wife, the Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle, will not be traveling. She is expecting a daughter, as you know. And she says that much as she would like to be at the funeral, she has been given medical advice that she should remain in California. There will, of course, be speculation as to just how much Meghan Markle really wanted to attend the funeral of the Duke of Edinburgh, given the explosive accusations that she lobbed at the royal family in that recent interview with Oprah Winfrey. But whatever the reason for her deciding not to travel, she's not going to be attending that funeral next weekend. And that, of course, will, I think, be welcome news for some members of the royal family, but definitely not welcome news to the editors of Fleet Street newspapers, who otherwise would have had quite a sidebar story to tell based around the funeral.
Simon, let's switch gears now. We've spoken about Matt Gaetz before, you know, with federal investigations into his activities. Now, the House Ethics Committee announcing its open investigation into him as to whether he did violate sex trafficking laws.
Yeah, and this is now getting very, very serious for the congressman from Florida. Just to bring everybody up to speed on who Matt Gaetz is, he's this very prominent Donald Trump supporting Republican member of Congress from Florida. His prominence has nothing to do with his successful passage of legislation on Capitol Hill, because actually so far he hasn't managed to pass a single law there. But his influence is partly due to the fact that he manages to make one of the most dangerous places on Capitol Hill the space between him and a live television camera. He has become ubiquitous on America's TV news channels, particularly those that lean conservative and attract large numbers of Republican-leaning viewers. We learnt about 10 days ago from the New York Times that a Justice Department investigation had been opened into the possibility that Matt Gaetz had broken federal sex trafficking law, a Justice Department probe that began while Donald Trump was still president of the United States, an investigation that Donald Trump's own Attorney General, William Barr, almost certainly knew about. This pertains to an alleged relationship that the congressman had with a 17-year-old girl, and now relates to financial payments that may have been made to arrange to make travel arrangements for that girl. And I mean, as we discussed last weekend, in terms of US law, if you were to spend money making arrangements for a 17-year-old girl to travel across state lines in order to pursue an illegal relationship with her, that travel itself would constitute trafficking. So he was in terrible trouble already. Now the House of Representatives launching this ethics probe at exactly the point that a friend and associate of Congressman Gaetz is reportedly cooperating with prosecutors after himself being charged with sex trafficking. So for Congressman Gaetz, the waters are becoming increasingly choppy. He made a speech in Florida at a Women for America First event on Friday night, in which he scoffed at what he called the smears that were being lobbed at him. He said it's all part of a deep state campaign to silence him. He said that he is a champion of women and absolutely is not going to be silenced as a result of what he insists are attempts to impugn his integrity. But I think there's absolutely no question that for him, his legal jeopardy is getting ever more complicated. And as a result, Republicans on Capitol Hill are beginning to distance themselves from him. But not so former President Donald Trump, who put a statement out earlier in the week denying reports that Matt Gaetz had ever asked him for a pardon while he was still president, and reminding everyone that the congressman had said that he had committed no crime. So Donald Trump still standing by the congressman, even as, you know, he seems to be wandering down a much more complicated legal road and a path on Capitol Hill that may well result in him being expelled from the House of Representatives.
Simon, to another interesting story now, you know, Amazon, their landmark union election, which they had in Alabama, warehouse workers are voting against forming a union, I believe, by more than 2-1 margin. And that's a major win for the retailer.
Yeah, it's a massive win for the retailer, and it is a massive blow for the labor union movement in the United States. There had been enormous anticipation among progressives on the left wing of the Democratic Party that these workers in Alabama were going to back unionization. And as you know, Amazon is often criticized, the company insists entirely unjustly, for working conditions in its plant. And the union involved in this particular effort, among others, saw this as a real opportunity to try and prove that Amazon's working conditions were not in favor of its now 1.3 million strong workforce. That gives you an indication of just how much everyone has been relying on Amazon through the pandemic. The business that Jeff Bezos founded has gone through the roof. Unions were hoping that this was going to be an opportunity to show through the vote in favor of unionization that indeed some of these allegations allegations about Amazon have substance, and as a result, the workers in the plant had backed unionization. Well, now we know the workers in the plant didn't come close to backing unionization. I think just around a third of those employees in the votes that have been tallied so far were backing the concept of unionization. So it was an overwhelming defeat. And this is going to strike a blow, not just in terms of union rights at that particular plant, but potentially all over the country. Because if employees from Amazon are not going to vote to unionize in Alabama, why would they necessarily vote to unionize in Virginia or New Jersey or anywhere else? It's allowed the company to say, see, all of these allegations that have been lobbed against us are not necessarily true. There have been interviews published here today with Amazon employees in Alabama who said, well, I decided not to vote for it because they're already paying me more than the minimum wage of $15 an hour. You get healthcare benefits from the moment you join the payroll, which is very unusual in the United States. And remember, in a country without a national health service, healthcare benefits through employment become absolutely pivotal in the lives of millions of families from coast to coast. And many of the workers interviewed said they just concluded that they were going to be able to strike a better deal with the company through personal face-to-face negotiation with the management than by outsourcing everything to a union and then having to pay union subscriptions and all of that kind of thing. So this is a blow for Democrats and progressives and unions in the United States, particularly, and a big win, of course, for Jeff Bezos, Amazon, and this new style economy, which has dramatically expanded over the last 13 months as the pandemic has rolled on and as people have given up going to bricks and mortar retail shops and have simply fired up their computers and ordered everything from Amazon and some of the other major online retailers.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition on CNA 938 with me, Justine Moss, and speaking to Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Simon, just talk about vaccines now. And there's been some chatter that President Biden will announce on Tuesday that all adults in the U.S. will be eligible for that COVID-19 vaccine by April 19th.
Yes. And as you know, the Biden administration continues to argue that all of this is fantastic news because it keeps advancing its targets, saying that it's reached previous targets so we can all now move forward faster. So the middle of April looks like the point at which total eligibility will be conferred on the American public. Remember that eligibility to get a vaccine is different than getting a vaccine, because in many parts of the country, there still isn't enough vaccine to meet demand. In some parts of the country, there is too much vaccine to meet demand. And that is worrying public health officials who look at states like Mississippi, where it's being widely reported that people just aren't showing up at vaccination sites. There was one survey conducted of members of the U.S. Marine Corps, and 40% of them have reportedly declined to get vaccinated. We've seen across military ranks in the United States and internationally, 30% of enlisted personnel saying that they don't want to get vaccinated. So on the one hand, you've got millions and millions of people getting vaccinated. But on the other hand, you've got millions of people saying they don't want to touch the jab. And that is posing potentially a conundrum here, because you could well end up in a situation where President Biden is saying to people, look, we really want to return to some semblance of normalcy. But the only way we can do that is to get to herd immunity. And those tens of millions of you who are refusing to take the vaccine, you're preventing us from getting to herd immunity. So I think that the government at some point soon is going to have to generate a strategy for that in an environment in which mandatory vaccination seems to be a complete political non-starter. But encouraging people to take up the vaccine is not necessarily moving the entire nation as rapidly as everybody would want towards herd immunity. Now, the president was saying this week, still looking to the July the 4th holiday as an opportunity for everybody to get in the back garden and fire up the grill and enjoy some burgers and some beers. But there was a calibration in what he said this week. Suddenly this week, the White House was saying, well, when the president talks about July the 4th, he's really talking only about the people who have been fully vaccinated. Only they could really get out there and enjoy Independence Day. And so I think we may be heading towards a situation of social division here between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. And that could start giving rise to substantial tensions between those two groups.
Thanks for listening to Simon Mark's reporting. And if you like what you heard, click the subscribe button and come back soon for more. And I'd love it if you'd give me a review. Those can be hugely helpful in spreading the word. Thanks a lot. More from me soon.